Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I just sort of looked around my bench, spotted them, thought, and my mind drift went, oh yeah, I've got those crisps. Oh, go on then, I'll do that. And I just sat myself down on the stool, rest my legs, because you've been on the legs a few hours, and sort of munched them.
Well, hello and welcome back to the Bake Down podcast. It is the voice of Josh Landy, founder of Bake with a Legend. Thank you so much for joining us here today. I thought, given that we're in lockdown, it would be a nice opportunity for me to catch up with some of the bakers who lead our classes all around the country. And I was really delighted that Karen Wright, a very memorable and lovely character from Series 9, was able to join myself for about 45 minutes to catch up on her story of how she got onto the show and her baking history. And actually, her story is quite unusual compared to many of the other bakers. So I do hope you'll enjoy listening to it, and do let me know any feedback. You can get in touch with us. It's thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. If you do have any feedback or any questions, I'm hoping to speak to more of the bakers in the weeks and I fear months ahead that we are in lockdown, but we'll see how that goes. I also wanted to let you know that whilst we're in lockdown, we're of course not running any events in person, but we are able to do events online, and we've had great fun with some of the bakers leading classes for people all across the world, friends getting together, workmates, people celebrating birthdays. So if you're hoping to do something just a little bit different whilst we're in this period of lockdown, we do have the opportunity to put on events and classes for you. So just head to bakewithalegend.com and you'll see a tab that says online classes. And if you want any more information, you can of course get in touch with us. So we hope to potentially see some of you online. Meanwhile, I had the real enjoyment of catching up with Karen Wright, as I said, a real star from Series 9. We heard all about her journey before Bake Off and her experiences in the tent. And before we got going, I asked Karen how she's coping during lockdown.
I've been doing exactly what the instructions are to everybody that isn't in the sort of front line, which is to stay home and stay safe, and I follow the rules. But I have got involved with a local group that are providing food parcels and meals for the people in the community that just have nobody to help them. They're shielding and are the very old and isolated, vulnerable. So I'm cooking pretty much every day, either cooking or baking, and that's keeping me really, really busy, and it's stretching me. It's a bit like, you know, the old programme Ready, Steady, Cook, where you had to make something out of random ingredients.
Yes.
Well, because people are donating the food, we have to come up with something suitable from the ingredients we've been given. So it's great, really. I'm enjoying that.
Oh, well, absolute credit to you for doing that, Karen. I've seen some of that on your social
on your social media. Listen, Karen, we've got probably however long we've got now, 35, 40 minutes, I'm thinking, to just look back. I want to learn a little bit more about you and talk about your experiences whilst you were on Bake Off. And I guess my first question is, what we must be coming up to, what, 2 years since you're filming? Something like nearly 2 years. Does it feel that long ago, or does it feel like you were in the tent, you know, a couple of weeks back almost?
Oh, it's a bit of a paradox, that question, actually, because in some respects, it feels as real as if it was happening only last weekend. I can picture everything and feel everything and smell everything. And, oh, it's very, very, very intense. The memories are very recent. But, yeah, it is actually 2 years about now that we went and started filming week one. Unbelievable. 2 whole years. So just...
You know, 2 years of age. Just give us some insight then, because I know some people that have been on Bake Off had applied more than once. Had you applied in previous years, or what was your experience of the application?
No, I think my situation is probably quite unique, in that I wasn't particularly very experienced baker in some respects, because although I baked bits and bobs all my life, I'd never really sort of veered off the straight and narrow in terms of experimenting with more unusual bakes, really. But I did get into making a lot of sort of party novelty cakes for my family and friends, kids and that, and everybody started to say to me, oh, that's really good, Karen, you know, you should go on the Bake Off. I never give it a second thought. But my daughter sent me the link to the application form. She did that, and I took a look at it, and I nearly didn't bother, because I could see that at that point I hadn't got the right skills. But I just thought to myself, well, I've got about 2 months before the application deadline closes. I wonder if it's possible. Is it possible to teach yourself the stuff you need to know to genuinely be good enough to get on the show? And I just set to, and I did like a bread week, and then I did a pastry week, and I went through all the disciplines, and it pretty much turned out okay. So I in for a penny, in for a pound, I just popped my application in, and I think it was a very good application. I think I sold myself quite well, but I really didn't expect to get the call. I did get the call. Yeah, it was absolutely amazing that happened to me.
Look, I think you have to say you did far better than in for a penny for a pound. You made it onto the show. You made it through 5 weeks. I think you're being very humble there. But that is unusual. It is unusual, because you think and you kind of see the backstories, don't you, sometimes, of the people that come on the show in the snippets that, you know, from baking at home. And you almost get the feeling that this has been, you know, destiny. I think it was Luke in your series who made a comment in the first episode of your series. And he said, this is in effect for a football fan playing at Wembley. And that's something you think of like being a life's ambition. But for you, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, I'd always watched the show right from the outset. And I was fascinated by the idea of it and the concept. And as it grew and people got, it's become an iconic show, hasn't it? It really has. I wanted to get into that tent. Who wouldn't want to have that experience? But I couldn't, to me, yes, Luke was right. I remember him saying that. I hadn't been a massive baker for all of my life, but I was fascinated by the show, and it intrigued me enough to see whether I could do this, you know, get the skills that I was required to have. And I think, really, if I've got a message for anybody, and I might be jumping the gun here a little bit, but I'll say it now while it occurs to me, that my journey is quite unusual. And I taught myself from scratch all those things I needed to do to get a place, one of the 12 places on the show. And I didn't know until I tried that it was possible. And it is, and that anybody should have a go, not necessarily baking, in whatever sphere that they might have an inkling that they'd like to try. Well, try it. And what better time than now, when we're all stuck at home, to try new things?
Absolutely right. But then just to pick up on something you said, you'd watched the show. Had you watched every series, like every episode? Or did you then, once you knew you were going to be on the show, sort of go back and
look through old episodes?
I did both.
Like that?
I mean, I had when the series first started, I was actually working every season. I was working in France with my husband John, and we did have a satellite dish, so we could get telly. And we hadn't got much more entertainment. So when the Great British Bake Off started, this was the highlight of my Tuesday evening every week. So yes, I'd watched pretty much all of the series, but when I got my place, I was looking back and seeing and scaring myself to death. Can you imagine when you think I'm going in there? I mean, it's surreal. It really is. It is surreal, and you know, it's only a baking show, but it's the baking. It is. It's more than that. I think it's more than that for people.
So John would have known you were going in. Did anyone else know? Or because it was just supposed to keep it a secret, pretty much.
It was a, yes, of course. It has to be kept a secret because it would spoil it. It would really spoil it for the public to get a leak in any way about who, because the build-up isn't the momentum. Who is the bakers this year? Could it be, could you be sitting next to them on the train going to work? It's somebody out there and everything. So as soon as you got the call to say that you were successful, then obviously you get a contract and what have you. But you have to be able to tell a few people because, you know, you're a human being and it wouldn't be possible to do all the work you have to do at home. So I told my husband and my, I've got two adult daughters and my cousin, and I think there was five of us knew, and they were very supportive, of course. And I never told my mum. I didn't tell my mum until the night before we were announced to the press. Because
wow.
I know. So she couldn't, she didn't, we could have people come to the final, you know, for the final filming. I couldn't risk it with poor mum because, you know, I had to be 100% sure that people could keep that secret. And it's such a big secret to keep. It's, I'd hate to have that burden. I really would.
So you're saying your mum found out the day before your filming started, not before the day it was on air?
Before the day it was announced to the Radio Times. So it was like towards the end of August, when the papers come out, the TV papers come out for the following week.
Yeah.
That is when obviously the Radio Times, TV Times and everything would have the listings.
You'd already done all your filming?
Yeah, all the filming was done, all in the bag,
and
everything. And yeah, so it's a big, that's the thing, isn't it? You're waiting now. It's all finished, you know, all done with, and you're waiting for it to air. And it's building up the tension within the bakers, of course. You know, it's, oh, it's, you know, it's going to go out there soon. And that is when I told the mum the night before she would hear it from anywhere else, basically.
There was a lot of talk, actually, just, you know, thinking back to the podcast, Jane, Howard and I did ahead of Series 10, that the average age was very low of the bakers. I think it was 31 in last year's. Your series, the average age, I did some maths just before we started this, was 33. Were you conscious of that? And because one other thing is that the last five winners now have all been in their 30s going into the show. Were you at all conscious of that? Or, you know, of the feeling that, you know, there was a real mix of people that had been picked and you were the eldest person going in? Were you conscious of that at all?
I was very pleased to be the eldest person. It's strange you should say that about yourself and age, but I just thought, I'm the oldest this year. Isn't that great? You know, yeah, it never really made any impact on me, really, because we just all did get on really well when you know, I'm quite easy with young people and I don't feel that I'm an oldie. So, yeah, it was just absolutely fine. I mean, we're really good friends, Terry and I. Now, and we sort of did gravitate towards each other perhaps more than any of the others, although we were good as a group. But he and I would find that we're sitting, you know, in the hotel in the evening having a drink together and chatting and things. So that might be an age thing, eh? He was, I think, 56 and I was 60 at the time. Then going down was my John. He was the next one. And then, yeah, like you say, they were all 20s and 30s. Did we have anybody in the 20s? Yes.
Kim Joy.
Yeah, but late 20s. We didn't have any really youngsters.
No, which we have had in previous series. Yeah. So we had Kim Joy and Ruby. So just give us some idea. You've gone down. You've taught yourself a huge amount in the 2 months before. Did you start to think, I've got a chance here? Or were you just like, wow? When you started to talk to all the other people, because are you like, oh my God, these people are really, like, their whole lives have been centered
around baking. Bit varied on that. I must admit, when we first met as a group in the hotel in the afternoon, I could see how intense some of the bakers were about their craft, really. And they were so knowledgeable about so many different techniques, some of which I had never come across before in my little crash course. I do remember isomalt. Ruby used isomalt in the in Spice Week to mix on her chandelier biscuit, I think. And I remember at the time, actually in the tent, thinking, what's isomalt? What is it? I was still trying. I was trying to melt sugar down to make my glass shards, and there was a new kid on the block that I've not even heard of. So I think that's just an example of how I hadn't really picked up on it on all the new trends and things, techniques. After week one, when we'd done the biscuit week, which I was pleased with my first week, I have to say I liked what I did. It worked as I expected it to do. I didn't do too badly in the in the technical for that one, but I could see the level of skill with the other bakers. And I must admit, when I came home from week one, having successfully got through to week two, which was going to be cake week, and it was going to be chocolate colour cake week. And this, of course, was something that I'd never done a chocolate colour before. Not even in my practice. I'd never done a chocolate collar before, you know, in practice to get onto the show. So I'd got my idea of what my chocolate collar two-tier cake was going to be, but it was very, very plain at this point. And after biscuit week, I thought, I'm going to have to up my game here. I'm going to have to do something and pull something out of the bag with my chocolate collar to bring it up to be a showstopper, which it turned out to be, actually. So yeah, I spent hours and hours in the middle of the night when we came home between week one and week two, sort of recrafting my design, because I could see that, you know, I needed to do something to stay in.
Yeah, because the standard would be so high. Do you remember what your first words were on Bake Off? Because I was watching your first episode last night, which just before we started recording, you told me you've never watched it back apart from presumably the night it was on air.
That's right. Never.
So do you remember what your first words were?
I have no idea. Tell me.
Your first words were, I believe I'm going to be good under pressure. So my question is, were you, Karen? Do you think you did well under the pressure generally?
Generally, I think I did. There was a couple of occasions when I was despairing and thought that I couldn't continue because, you know, I just didn't really, I wasn't keeping up to speed with the task in hand. In general, I did, but a couple of things nearly threw me. And I was helped by the production, one of the producers, to sort of quiet myself and to sort of steady on. It's a bit like getting somebody to breathe in the paper bag situation. And I pulled it out. I mean, I think I'm talking about week four when we had to do a chocolate melting dome. And I had done so badly in the earlier, in the signature, and come last in the technical, that I thought, oh, the writing's on the wall, I'm going home. And thinking, and there was going to be the double eviction that week, so we thought. And I thought, well, that's me gone, I'm gone. And I just thought, how can I do this when I know, it's like, I felt like I was walking to the gallows and I knew I had to perform, yet I was still going to be strung up. But I was helped by people off camera to say, come on, you know, focus and everything. And I suddenly pulled the strength back to really, and my showstopper was fantastic. It saved the day, I think, for me. It was really good. And I think it taught me a lot about myself, really, by putting myself under such an immense amount of pressure that, you know, if you have to, you can. You can hang in there by your fingernails, really. So it's been a great learning curve from that point of view.
It sounds like it. I mean, one thing else I noticed from watching that first episode is you had a massive smile on your face every time they come to you. You really did. But did you were put right at the front bench, weren't you, for week one? Did you? Yeah. Because that is something, because that means you've got to turn around to see what else is going on. Whereas if you're sort of towards the back, I can imagine you get a bit more of a feel for how everyone's doing and if everyone's sort of stressed or not. You were right at the front.
I was. Yes. Well, I mean, I didn't obviously had no idea what was going to happen to us that first week. You wouldn't, would you? Who knows? And you go in, and my name was on that first bench. And I'm glad actually that that first week I wasn't at the back, because I think sometimes as the weeks progressed and I was sitting further back, I found it not an advantage to see what people were doing. It's a bit, it put me off a bit, especially when I wasn't feeling as mine was going very well, and i.e. the isomalt with Ruby in front of me doing this amazing construction. And I mean, mine was fine in the end, but I was, you know, it makes you question yourself when you can see other people at work. Whereas at the front, especially week one, I felt really, really well prepared for week one. I felt I'd got everything under control, and I'd built an insurance time, hence. I don't know whether you're going to mention the crisp gate at some point. Probably you are, but that is that happened because I had built in the practice at home. I'd built in insurance time, in the sure and certain knowledge that something would go wrong, because it always does on Bake Off, doesn't it? And I'd got this 10 minutes built into my practice, and it didn't go wrong. My biscuit selfie worked perfectly. I was very happy with the result of it. And I finished 10 minutes or so, maybe five, I don't know, before the end. And it was great. So I felt really relaxed in actual, because I couldn't see what was going on behind me, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And yes, you're right. It was very much going to be my next question, because there are iconic moments of Bake Off that people will all, fans of the show will always remember. And you're sitting there almost without a care in the world in a program where, without fail, every episode is people running around stressed, looking like they're desperately trying to get things finished before the time is up. But what was it really, 5, 10 minutes you had? And how did it go? I mean, are you allowed to bring in snacks that you had? I noticed, I think it was Walker's Squares. Are they a big favourite of yours?
They are now. So, first question, are we allowed to bring snacks in? Because you're in the tent for such a long time, and it's a very long day, and obviously you do get lunch, but it can be quite late in the day. So you were asked beforehand, what sort of, they could say, what would you like in your snack box? So some people would choose chocolate bars, some people would be healthy and have fruit, whatever, you know. And I just said, I love crisps. I'm a savory person. So I got a little Tupperware provided with whatever they put in there, and it turned out to be, on that particular occasion, salt and vinegar squares. Yeah, so they were tucked under box underneath the bench. I finished a few minutes, well, you know, a few minutes in front of everybody else. And I do remember very clearly the relief in my body, my whole body, when I put that biscuit soapy to the end. I thought it was literally exhale, wow, I've done it and I like it. It's fine. Ooh, I don't feel worried. I don't feel worried. I hadn't seen anybody else's at this point, but I didn't feel worried. And I just sort of looked around my bench, spotted them, thought, and my mind drift went, oh yeah, I've got those crisps. Oh, go on then, I'll do that. And I just sat myself down on the stool, rest my legs, because you've been on the legs a few, you know, your feet a few hours, and sort of munched them. And it looks terrible, doesn't it? Don't you think? It looks really bad. When I
No.
saw it,
Were you
oh.
conscious? Because it looked like there's a camera clearly on you and you're looking back at the camera. So were you thinking, I wonder if that's going to make the edit? Because you have a few months before it goes on air. Did you remember, or it wasn't until you
I
watched the
didn't
episode
know.
one?
I remember, because remember it was week one, so I was bemused by the number of cameras everywhere. You know, they're absolutely everywhere. So although I realised they were pointing in my direction, I never gave it another thought. It really didn't occur to me that that would be of any interest to anybody. And of course, it was shown in the week up to it being aired. They start putting clips on the telly, and I remember that clip going out, and my husband said, because we fell out about it actually. I watched that little clip of me with the crisps, and my husband said, "Well, Karen, they haven't done you any favours there." And I went, well, I thought it was quite funny, John. That looks, I know, but I thought on screen it looked quite funny, and I could see the entertainment value of it. And of course, people had differing views on me from that point. I know. I mean, I didn't pay too much attention to Twitter or anything, but I was aware that some people thought that I was game playing. Some people thought I was just like eccentric, I suppose.
Oh, I think it came across, you know, like, well, it was obviously the way it was edited, because you show someone very relaxed eating some crisps, followed by, I think it was Rahul possibly trying to do some feathering or something quite technical.
It was Dan behind me. The naughtiest part about it that I said and they filmed, and it wasn't preempted by me, because I was completely like out of my normal life, wasn't I, in there. And I was eating the crisps and I did turn round and look, and Dan was behind me finishing his biscuit selfie with that baby he's got. And he was very pink in the cheeks and looked very flustered. But I remember thinking, there's no point in asking him if I can help him, because he's got like a minute, and by the time he's told me what he wanted me to do, his minute would be up. So I knew not to help, because it would distract him. But I did foolishly say, "Would you like a crisp?" And I thought, and he went, "I would not like a crisp." And that was shown on, and they showed that on television. And I thought, oh, you know, that was probably not the best thing to say at the time.
Yeah, but I think people would have seen it for what it was, with the right intentions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no side to me, you know, what you see is what you get generally. But yeah, it was, I mean, Crispgate, yeah, that will, it has to probably be my favourite little clip out of the time. I'll have to look at it again now. Yeah, I have to watch it.
So, Karen, you had 5 weeks. Just, I guess, let's give an overarching reflection on them. I mean, just to start with, every year up to you, and you were a big fan of the show, you know, you'd watch all the way through, had started with cakes. And then suddenly, you know, for whatever reason, you started with biscuits, and then week two was cakes. Were you sort of expecting cakes to be week one, or you were happy to have a challenge on biscuits?
I was expecting, like everybody, it to be cakes again. But it didn't bother me in the slightest, because as soon as I saw the brief for the biscuits, which was week one, when it came through the same day that we'd been told we were on the show, they start giving you, you know, the things you've got to think about. And I liked it. It was, for me, you know, sometimes you set a task, and if you don't know how to start or what to do or what vision you've got, then that is a worry. And there were parts in later episodes that I agonised when I saw the brief and thought, like, for example, Biscuit Chandelier in week five, that was the most challenging thing I read in my life. You will make a biscuit chandelier. But week one, biscuit week, as soon as I saw it, I thought, I know what I'm going to do. And because it was biscuit selfie, I know myself. I know how to portray me in colour and biscuit, you know. So I was quite delighted, and the first one was a signature biscuit, not a signature, a biscuit with a theme, the place,
regional
biscuit. Yeah, regional, that was it. Yeah, so I thought, well, yeah, there's loads of those. So I was quite happy, very more than happy with the first week, and I think that's probably why I went down with the confidence that I appeared to have, because I'd really hadn't struggled to get the design, the ideas of what I was going to do. And I felt that I could bring it in on time because I practiced that so much. And one thing I'm very good at, I have to say myself, loads of things I'm not, but one thing I'm good at is if somebody gives me a time to work to a deadline, I'll bring it in. I always have been able to. So I was confident with that. The biscuits were great. I was more challenged by the cake week when we saw that, to be honest. Yeah, that chocolate colour.
And just obviously the technicals, which I guess is always a little bit more difficult in terms of, you know, realistically what preparation, you know, can be done. It, you know, you're going to be presented with something you're not sure about. Because you came sixth in that first week, which is, you know, top half, a solid start, that must have given you some confidence as well on the technical challenges.
It did. I think that was a great thing to have happen, because it was wagon wheels, wasn't it? And it was a messy one, and there was lots of techniques in there. I did okay with that, and like you say, quite correctly, that added to the fact that I felt that I was strong enough anyway, in the in the design, certainly my biscuit selfie, and the regional for the signature. So yeah, a stroke of luck, because I wasn't good at technicals in general. As it went down, I think I did five, and I came last in three, I seem to think.
Well, certainly, yeah, week two when it was cakes, that was
That was absolutely, that was one of the times I had the wobble. Yeah.
Yeah, legato vert. That was
the gatto vert. Who would make a spinach cake? Eh? Who would do that? Monet's garden in Gavenay. Yes, that was a terrible thing to see. And that was when I was at the back of the tent. So coming back to the question about positioning in the tent, the second week, I was the very last bench at the far left, I think. And Anthony was in front of me. And this challenge, and it was basically, should have whisked the sugar and the eggs up to make it the bulk. And I just had a mental block. I just couldn't understand the instructions. Just couldn't. And that awful, awful sinking feeling when you just think, oh no, I do not know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I was watching Anthony, and I could see what he was doing, and I couldn't even compute it in my head to do the same. I mean, I did come up with something, but it was absolutely shocking, and it deserved to be last, to be honest.
Yeah. And then, but that was one of the examples when then you got yourself dusted down and you came back. And yours was what, the strawberry fair chocolate?
The strawberry fair. I have to say, and the cameramen, that you know, the people that do the vox pop ones, they always said to me, "Karen, you can pull a showstopper off," and I perhaps I can. I'm quite a larger than life character, and I'm a bit of a performer, I think. You know, I quite like, you know, if somebody said, "Would you like to be on the West End in the chorus?" I'd go, "Yes, bring it on," you know. So anything that's OTT is right up my street, really. And that cake is the one that I'd gone home and practiced and put all the piping on and decided to sing as well. I sang to Noel Fielding when he came around to talk to me. I sang Strawberry Fair. Because that was what I was doing. So yeah, I really enjoyed that, and I did get myself out of the mire with it. I loved that cake in the end, and Paul Hollywood did as well. In fact, he should have given me a handshake. I never got one, of course, but I think I was close for that cake. He said it was one of the best. You know, he really liked it anyway. So yeah.
Is that what you look back on as you're most proud about, of the sort of 15 bakes you'd have done? Is that the one that stands out?
Well, no, one of them. I mean, I love my Corrivi. My Corrivi in Bread Week. It was a beautiful thing. And I loved the fact that I gave it a veil, because it was a Russian wedding bread. So it was three tiers. And And I was concerned when I was designing it that I wouldn't have, and I didn't have time to do decorations all the way around the breads. So on the last, just as getting off to go to the train to go down to do the week, I was worried about this. So I popped into a fabric shop and I bought some chiffon and a needle and cotton and a headband, like little girls wear. And on the train going down to London, I fashioned a veil for my bride, and I pulled it out of my bench, and I've got a picture somewhere. I saw it online of me putting this veil on the bread, and Noel Fielding stood at the side of me, and he's saying to me, "Are you getting married to this bread?" And I say, "Well, it's better looking than my husband." I've seen that as I was putting the bread on, and I took it up for judging with the veil over its face, if you know what I mean, and then revealed it to Prue like that. So that was quite dramatic as well. I enjoyed that. Yeah, I did.
That was, your French breakfast wedding, Corrivi.
That was the French breakfast wedding, randomly, yes. A Russian lady meets a French man. That was the... Because everything has to have a story, a backstory, doesn't it? I mean, all your books. I didn't know this. You see, I didn't know. How would you know that all your bakes need to have a backstory? But that is a true one. I didn't make anything up. All my backstories were based on fact. I have to say that's a fact, is that. Yeah, another podcast, I'll tell that story. I'm okay to do that.
And you'd done okay in technical that week on the Narnbrids. You'd come fifth.
So that was okay.
Because I must say, you know, those first 3 weeks, you'd not been in danger really of going by the time we got towards, you know, the end of the show. You'd been very stable. And then week four, desserts. Mm. And we had this strange situation, obviously, with Terry not being there. When did you sort of realise he wasn't going to be there, and that did you only really find out at the very end of that episode that no one would be going because you might have otherwise worried?
Well, that's it. Well, the thing is about that, we found out in the morning. The production team said, look, we've called us together and said, we've got something to tell you. Terry's been taken ill, is not going to make it this week. And they asked us all how we felt about that and how we'd want to proceed, or, you know, and we all just went, we'll just go with whatever the production team want, how they want to play it, really. So then we started to, that's when I got worried then, because I thought, oh, hang on a minute, though. If there's one less baker, then the odds are stacked against us all more, you know. And I kept saying, but this makes it more difficult, more chance that we're going out on week four than there would have been with the extra person. But they went, well, that's just how it is. And then when I was having such a shocking start, that is why I thought I'd be going, you see, because I had such a bad, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it certainly didn't hold, you know, it wasn't good. The signature, and then I came last in the blancmange. Can't believe that, you know, when they said Prue set the challenge and it for the technical for week four, and she said it's going to be a classic retro dessert, and it's going to be a blancmange. And I could hear the gasps from the other bakers, because most of them had never heard of a blancmange. Of course, me being the age I am, the oldest person, I knew full well what a blancmange was. I thought, hooray, 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 you know, I can do a blancmange. And it didn't work out for me. So after that, I thought, well, you know, that's the end. I'm going home. My days in the tent are now up, because somebody's going. And I'm, at that point, clearly, I would have gone. So that's when I had that wobble and I was upset. And then I pulled myself together and I did the melting chocolate dome. And who knows who would have gone? That's one of those, you know, we never know now, because, of course, Bryony, who went on to be a semi-finalist, she'd done the most spectacular melting chocolate dome. It was beautiful, but it collapsed before judging. She came back. Yes. It was like a balloon that, you know, let the air out of it. And I mean, I felt for her, because it had been so beautiful. And then I think it was Ruby's dome was only half a dome and everything. So, you know, you look at it, don't you? And you could see it. The tension was there, that I knew it wasn't certain that I would go, but I was definitely a contender to go by that time. And then, of course, amazingly, they didn't send anybody home after building up that. I mean, it was a real build up for all of us, because we knew somebody was going. Yes, somebody's going. And then they said no, but it'll be two next week.
It'll be two next week. And of course, then, you know, it was Spice Week. And this was the first ever Spice Week. So, you know, for you, as again, I've mentioned a big view of the show, you must have been expecting themes. Did you ever think about Spice?
No, when not really. I think it had never occurred to me, and it was spice. What did they mean by spice? Just, I mean, it's just putting some ginger in your cake, isn't it? Or putting some cinnamon or something like that. One of those bakes. But yeah, when you first get that brief, spice, I didn't know what to expect, and it was simple. And I, you know what? It was my final week, and I do feel that I was justified to go. It was right enough that I should. But I let myself down with that first bake. Who can't bake just a ginger sponge, basically, and do it right? Karen can't. She did it wrong. She messed up. And, you know, for that, I hold my hand up. I was tricked. I'll say that with the nicest possible way. I don't really mean it. But what happened was I decided it had to be a ginger cake. And I designed this cake, and I decided to use brandy in the frosting. I was going to do cream cheese frosting, like a Brandy Alexander the cocktail. That was the idea. And so I'd got this half bottle of brandy on my bench. And it was not, again, I mentioned Noel a lot, but he figured because I liked him. I liked them all, but he came around and he said, "What's this then?" And I said, "Oh, it's from a frost thing." And he just started saying, "Oh, you know, Prue's very fond of a nip of brandy. You know, put more in, put more in." And he was only teasing me, but of course I went a bit crazy and I put brandy into the mixture, which I'd never done at home. I put brandy into the frosting, but I put so much in that it was just awful. And then, just like you put sherry on cherry trifle cake in your sponges, I sprinkled neat brandy onto my sponges and put the whole lot together. And, you know, why did I do that to myself? I just went crazy. And Paul Hollywood basically said, you know, if it'd been a brandy cake, fine, but it doesn't. It's not a brandy challenge. It's ginger. I thought, oh, that's me. Yeah.
So you think had Noel not come round and just mentioned that, it wouldn't have, might have played on your mind in some way?
Well, I think if Noel hadn't mentioned it, and he was only just joking, obviously, having a laugh. But because I'm a bit impulsive, my daughters would tell me, and they warned me to stay with what I'd planned. And up to that point in the show, all the episodes that I was in, I had stuck to my recipes and not messed about. And I just went OTT. I just thought, oh, what, you know, he might be right. Let's make it more exciting. So no matter what I did later, because two people had to go, I'd really written myself out of the show, I think, on that. And then I came last again. Did I come last? What was it? Oh yes, those Middle Eastern biscuits.
You're right. I mean, yourself and Terry were, I think, the bottom two in the technical. And by that point, then you not for the first time sort of did something, you know, about, you know, yourself or the region. You went for this Pontefract Girls' School reunion backstory of what you do. By the time you were making that showstopper, did you think, whatever I do here, I'm in trouble?
I think that's that. By the time we went back for day two, having done day one and made a mess of everything, I had almost a sense of, I was quite relaxed about it. I wasn't anxious at all, because I, you know, when you know, and I knew no matter what I did, no matter failing, everybody else being terrible, but no matter what I did with my showstopper this time, it wasn't going to be enough. And I loved my showstopper, because the showstopper is the one that gave me the biggest challenge I mentioned earlier. The brief, when you read the brief, it said, "You will make a biscuit chandelier." And I looked at that on the email and I said to John, at home, my husband, "Oh no, well, you know, John, just read this. I don't know what I mean. I don't understand how I can do this. You know, it's got to be so big. It's got to be so heavy, but it can't be so heavy. It's got to be so many things it could and couldn't be. And you know, structure wise. And it took an enormous effort between me and him and my two girls to think outside the box, to get anything together, to be honest, that would hold up. So I knew I liked what I was doing for that chandelier. I knew I'd got a strong backstory, which is, again, a correct backstory. It used licorice, because that was what we grew in Pontefract back in the day. And lots of the colours on there, it was my signature colours being bright and bold. But I sort of knew that even if I pulled off the perfect one, it would never be enough. So I was ready. I was ready to go. I knew it was the time. And not without a few tears, obviously, that we shed, but I wasn't upset in the way that you might think you would be.
What I think was also so memorable about you, Karen, was your quote at the end, where they come to you once you've learned that you're going to be, you know, leaving the tent. And you said, "Outside of having a family as a personal achievement, nothing will ever top this." And that was, you know, very moving. You obviously felt very proud of yourself, having sort of got through half the process.
I was very sincere when I said that. And of course, you don't know what you're going to say. You don't have a script. You just say from the heart what comes out. But it's true. I loved it. I felt so privileged to be given that opportunity. I loved everything about it, even the bad times, you know, but there were personal bad times. Nothing bad was done. But, you know, the times that I struggled, I gained so much from that. Even the age you are, you know, you think at 60, but I'm learning like everybody does as you go through different experiences. So the privilege of being invited onto the show and getting halfway and just it was fabulous. I'd just do it again in an instant. I wouldn't really change anything either. It was how it was, and I loved every moment, and I've got so much more from it 2 years down the line, and I'm doing things now that I would never ever have thought I could possibly do. But I say to anybody, if you feel you can't do something, for me, if I feel I can't do something, I think you've been in the tent. You were in the tent. And I know it's not going to the moon or being an astronaut, but it's significant. It's a significant thing. And I've been there and I did it and managed all the challenges that were given to me. And I came through at the other end, and it's just wonderful. It really was. Yeah. And I've great friends, you know, some more than others. I mean, Terry and I, we left together and we remain excellent friends. We speak most days. It's lovely.
That is fantastic. And yes, such a positive reflection on the process and encouraging of others to do it. Well, we occasionally see you, Karen, at Bake with Legend classes, and we very much hope those are going to be back in the not so distant future. But you touched upon there, you know, opportunities that have come your way. Just give us an idea. I know you do food festivals. You're very passionate about sort of, you know, traveling over to France, I think, in the caravan. Just give us an insight into what life has been like on the other side of
coming out. On the other side of Bake Off. Yes. Well, I will. I'm happy to do that. Initially after Bake Off, I thought that perhaps I would get an agent and I would be scooped up, because, you know, because I thought I could do more and I would be a stepping stone. And it was very quiet initially, you know, and I didn't get an agent. So I spent about 3 days, 2 or 3 days moping, I think, about thinking, oh, well, that's that, feeling a bit flat. And then as I tried to do, I shook myself about a bit and thought, right, let's see what you can do. And I started approaching people by email, because I'm not very good face to face. Nobody likes to be knocked back, but I found that nobody does. I emailed my local council first thing. Rhubarb, I live in the Rhubarb Triangle, and we had a rhubarb festival, and they said, yeah, come on, you know, come and do this. So I went and did that. Then I realized that my caravan and motorhome and camping life might be of interest to the caravan club, so I got in touch with them and said, I'm a member, but I've also been on the Bake Off, what can we do together? So lo and behold, now I'm sort of almost an ambassador for them. I do all sorts of work for them. And then I was asked to be to write each week for my local paper. So I write for my paper, which is lovely. I've got my own column. It's called The Right Side of Life. And when things were normal, I used to go to the BBC Radio Leeds once a month to do a foodie slot. So, and then for the food festival, things got more. And then motivational speaking. You see, that's the thing. I'm working for Bake with a Legend, obviously. It's fabulous. And I do speaking whenever anybody asks me to. I'll speak. And people are interested in, because it's the Bake Off, and all the questions that people always want to ask. But more, I do get passionate about the fact that it has opened doors for me. But the door opened, but I pushed it wide open then, you know. I used that. And I've built confidence to do things. There's many, many things. I love life. It's wonderful. And even now in lockdown, when all the opportunities that I'd got booked in my calendar and diary for this year are now pretty much cancelled, I find that I can use that. For example, doing this baking for the local community, and I use the tools that I have social media wise and in my paper to try to help, but, you know, to push the message that we can stay strong, stay home, stay safe, be busy, get some structure in your life. All the things that I try to do. Somebody said you should try telling people. I didn't want to be too pushy, but people said, you know, you should. You've got some followers. You should reach out and speak. So I'm enjoying the Bake Off even now in the situation that we find ourselves in.
I think it's a credit to you. And, I can see, and obviously we've got to know each other a little bit in recent months, that you are someone that is, you know, very involved in different projects and very busy. And when you touch upon something motivational, I really take something from you, because your approach to Bake Off is different from the other former contestants I've dealt with in terms of being able to teach yourself so much in a very short space of time to get yourself to a level where not only did you get on, but you got through half the process. And then also to be proactive coming out of the show, you know, where, you know, it is invariably easier to be a bake-off winner or a bake-off finalist to do certain opportunities. But you more than most, I think, have gone about sort of finding, you know, such a variety of opportunities. Yeah. I think that's credit to you. And I think why you would make such a good motivational sort of speaker and inspiring person.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, well, I'm just enjoying the process and getting as much out of life as possible. And that's given me the key to do it, really. Yeah, it's great. It's really, really great, you know.
Well, that's all from this week's podcast with Karen and myself. I really hope you did enjoy listening to her experiences and reflections about her time on the Great British Bake Off. Just a reminder, if you are interested in online events with one of our Bake Off stars, do head to bakewithalegend.com and click on the tab about online events. And if you're interested in supporting Bake With A Legend, you can, of course, purchase an apron. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are doing more baking at the moment. So if you think you could do with a new apron, head on to our website and our store and we can still get an apron out to you. Well, that's all from me. I'll be back soon interviewing another of the bakers who we work with. And until then, stay safe. And we'll speak to you all soon.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.